Hello, seafood friends. You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood prices, news, and data. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione. We're kicking things off with some merger and acquisition news. Undercurrent broke the story late last week that U.S. shrimp-focused frozen seafood importer Eastern Fish Company is for sale, with owner Mauro Beni tasking one of the world's best-known advisors on M&As to run the process. You may recall that Tokyo, Japan-based Mauro Beni, which had $51.4 billion in revenue in its most recent fiscal year, purchased a controlling 85% stake in Eastern Fish in 2014 for $56.7 million. Sources say it's now shopping the firm, hiring a specialist to run the sales process for the Teaneck, New Jersey-based company, which is a major player in wild and farm-raised shrimp. Eastern Fish also sells both king and snow crab, scallops, finfish, lobster, and squid.
Eastern Fish, which has been in business since 1974, had $440 million in sales at its height in the final pre-COVID year of 2019. However, as Eric Bloom, the company's president and chief operating officer, previously told Undercurrent, Eastern Fish has seen a decline in its sales by value and volume since the pandemic. Sources told Undercurrent this week that U.S.-based seafood investor Jordan Mazzetta is closing in on the deal to buy Eastern Fish. The deal has not yet been signed, but according to several sources, Mazzetta has exclusivity and is moving toward closing. Mazzetta would not comment beyond the following brief statement, and I quote, "I don't confirm or deny. If there is a process, everyone is bound by non-disclosure agreements. So really, you could only hear from people not involved."
Keep an eye on undercurrentnews.com as the story develops. And believe it or not, that's not the only big M&A news to break this week. And it's all happening in our home state of New Jersey. India multinational Captain Fresh is closing in on the acquisition of a large East Coast U.S.-based frozen shrimp and seafood importer after having added Ocean Edge Foods and Ocean Garden products to its central seaway company, Sensi. Sources confirmed to Undercurrent that Captain Fresh is close to finalizing the purchase of Blue Sea Products, an importer based in Perth Amboy, New Jersey. Undercurrent actually first reported the prospect of a Captain Fresh buying Blue Sea back in February 2025. When it emerged, the Indian firm was also acquiring Ocean Garden. Some are expecting the deal to be announced before Seafood Expo North America, which is really a little over a month away at this point.
Not ready for that, Lauren.
I'm not either.
Meanwhile, in Norway, cod farmer Oed has entered into an agreement to acquire three aquaculture sites from one of its peers. I'm not going to attempt to butcher the name, but the deal represents a significant strengthening of Oed's site portfolio, adding 9,360 metric tons of maximum allowable biomass. Oed expects to harvest approximately 17,500 metric tons of cod in 2026, excluding any contribution from this acquisition. Next year, in 2027, it expects volumes of around 27,000 metric tons, including the contribution from this acquisition. The company added that its current license capacity stands at 40,000 metric tons, which it expects to reach in 2028.
All right, for some market news, let's go to the salmon markets. Starting with Chile, the fresh market continues to ease into week five. Filet pricing softened again, down about 10 to 15 cents a pound across core size bands. What's important, though, is that the softness isn't a universal theme here. On the frozen side, the tone is actually firmer. Frozen Chilean fillets moved higher this week, and that lines up with improving demand and the fact that we're not seeing excess frozen inventory here in the U.S. market, even though there are reports that there's still some availability back at origin in Chile. As we move closer to Valentine's Day and Lent, the expectation is that pricing stabilizes and then firms as buying gets squeezed into a tighter window. Shifting to Norway, the big move was in whole fish. Whole fish prices jumped, which is a clear change from the softer tone we heard just a week ago. Supply is starting to stall while demand remains steady, and that's tightening the market very quickly. And finally, Canada, pricing there continues to be driven more by harvest consistency and logistics rather than demand. Harvesting on the East Coast is active, but weather disruptions are complicating both fishing and transportation. And sizing is skewing a little bit larger, so there's tighter availability of mid-sizes, which is adding another layer of complexity to coverage. So lots of moving parts on salmon front this week. You can keep abreast of it all on Undercurrent News in the pricing portal.
Another number heavy article I'm going to tease here is from our West Coast reporter, Jacob Resnick, who reported this week on the forecast for the high value Copper River salmon fishery. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is forecasting an average run of 1.41 million sockeye in 2026. And remember that 2025's 840,000 harvested sockeye were well below the 1.92 million red salmon forecast. So Jacob reports that ADFNG's projections were more tempered. So check out the link in the show notes to read more about the forecast. Moving along, we can't avoid talking about this cold front. I was complaining about the cooler weather in Florida last week, but I will take that any day over what we're experiencing on the East Coast at this moment.
Agreed. Right now, the storm that pummels the East Coast U.S. has moved into Canada's Maritimes, and Undercurrents' Barb Dean Simmons reports that the winter weather is disrupting the fishery, ultimately shutting it down for the beginning of the week with hope of being able to get out by the weekend. But bad weather is expected to ramp up again on Sunday, so a lot is in the air. As Barb reported last week, the rough weather and limited supply were blamed for the rising dock prices of North American lobster, and they've edged up again slightly this week. Barb's got all the numbers, so check out her story, link in the show notes. On to some news we can cheer about. Cape Charles, Virginia-based Cherrystone Aquafarms has become the first hard-shell clam farm in the U.S. to achieve Best Aquaculture Practices, or BAP, certification. Yeah. The fifth generation, family-led company received certification from the Global Seafood Alliance for its farming operations spanning roughly 9,000 acres on Virginia's eastern shore. Cherrystone, the largest producer of hard-shell clams in the U.S., is the first shellfish farm on the U.S. East Coast to gain BAP certification. So let's give Cherrystone a round of applause. And we'll keep the applause going as I want to quickly highlight a great moment from last week at the National Fishery Institute's Global Seafood Marketing Conference in Hollywood, Florida. Boa & Son Insurance partnered with SeaShare to host a fundraiser that raised $16,000, translating to more than 95,000 servings of seafood for food banks across the country. The Caddyshack-themed cocktail event had a fantastic turnout with golf contests, prizes, and of course, strong support from across the industry. So a huge thank you to the companies that donated, and a special shout out to South Stream Seafoods for stepping up with a $5,000 matching donation. SeaShare plays a critical role in getting seafood, one of the most nutrient dense but least accessible proteins, into food banks. And this event was a great example of what the industry can do when we come together. So big thanks to FOA & Son, SeaShare, and everyone who made it a success.
All right, since you brought up GSMC, here's one last fun thing. And let me start off by saying I'm not complaining, but just jump on this train with me and see where it ends up.
Oh boy, here we go.
Okay, so I don't know if you had this conversation with people last week, but there were mentions about how there wasn't a lot of seafood being offered at the receptions, and like the lunch that was available, like there was all burgers, but no seafood option. And the argument was that, you know, if we as an industry are trying to boost seafood consumption, why are we at an industry event that is serving something like pork dumplings? So to play devil's advocate, you know, the event is at a hotel, so they have to work with the banquet and catering team and what they provide.
Where are we going with this?
Yes. Okay. So here we go. A headline that caught my eye this week was IDFA serves sushi at opening reception despite competition to pizza. So my first thought was, who/what is IDFA? Turns out it's the International Dairy Food Association. So another trade industry group. And like us, they also dissect every bit of a trade conference that they go to.
And like us? And like you?
I said there was other people. I was the only one having, I was talking to myself at this event.
True.
So the folks in the dairy industry are apparently having these same discussions as us, because they met in Palm Desert, California, or they're meeting there now, which is an old haunt of GSMC. And one of the headlines to come out of the event is that sushi, the ultimate non-dairy item, is being served at a reception for dairy folks.
Heaven forbid. In defense of the NFI reception offerings, it is nice to have a selection, although I would have loved to get some sushi at any of those receptions.
Agreed. And like I said before, not a complaint. NFI's event was fantastic, but this sushi reception food thing is a big deal to the dairy people because the Wall Street Journal had recently declared sushi to be a competitor to dairy's longtime darling pizza. And pizza restaurants, of course, are a major buyer of cheese. And the Fence Post, they're an ag industry outlet, they report that pizza is one of the reasons that the industry is doing well, even though consumption of fluid milk has gone down in recent years.
I'm sorry, dairy industry. Have we never had a Philly roll?
What's in a
Cream
Philly
cheese and
roll?
salmon?
Oh, so they could be jumping on the sushi trend if they really wanted.
But basically you're saying that the dairy industry sees us as a threat.
Yes, seafood is a threat. We've got ourselves a good old-fashioned food fight on our hands. In this corner, with Americans eating roughly 23 pounds or 46 slices a year, is pizza. And in the other corner, with around 5 million Americans eating it at least once a month, and 43.7 million servings sold at grocery stores alone, is, drumroll, sushi. What do you go to that fight?
I'm sorry to the listeners that I didn't stop her sooner.
Well, the Wall Street Journal story earlier this month, they said that pizza, once the go-to birthday party food for kids, now some are requesting sushi instead.
And with sushi now being sold at club stores and in platters in your local grocery deli sections, it's just as accessible, if not more, than pizza.
Exactly, because so you can see how this threat is starting. You can see how this rivalry is forming. But I didn't really get a chance to touch on the retail side of things from GSMC last week. One of the things speaker Anne Marie Rohrink, president of 210 Analytics, said was that sushi has become a powerhouse. And again, if dairy's seeing it as a threat, but US consumers are watching what they spend, and those measures include fewer restaurant visits, seeking out sales, and cutting back on non-essentials. But while consumers don't want to pay the price for a restaurant meal, they want restaurant quality food at home, she explained. And that's reflected in Anne Marie's breakdown of total store seafood sales in 2025. So she reported that sushi dollar sales totaled $2.9 billion, up 7%. And she said the gains weren't just in dollars, where inflation played a factor, but also units sold, up 5.9% to 312 million.
She also talked about what generation is buying it, which is interesting in the case of pizza versus sushi. Anne Marie said that boomers are still the majority spender at retail, but Gen X and millennials are really closing in. But sushi is primarily Gen Z. They're the ones that are fueling sales growth.
And I looked at what generation is buying pizza, and I mean, it's all of them.
It's all of us.
Anne Marie even had a slide that showed pizza as a staple, all-time favorite meal amongst millennials and boomers. But meals are evolving, and sushi, it could win the food fight down the line. But like I said, it was just cool to see that dairy sees the sushi specifically as a threat. I like that.
That's funny. That was interesting. I appreciate you bringing that to the table.
You're welcome. All right, we got more episodes coming to you weekly every Friday. So if you're not subscribed, what are you
What are you
doing?
waiting for?
All right, thanks for listening, and we'll see you back here next week.
Bye-bye.